Are you a creative or have the urge to find your creativity? Do you want to break out of the expected, view things in a different way, and unearth the unseen? The Forward Creative Podcast explores different creative concepts or hobbies every week. My name is Scott Banco. I'm an entrepreneur, podcast producer, and on the Forward Creative Podcast, we'll help you gain that ability to monetize your creative passions, help you find your creative community, and grow your individual creativity. Thank you so much for being part of this journey, and I look forward to helping you find those creative passions within. Welcome back to Forward Creative, everyone. I have something exciting I'm launching new on the podcast for creators. So each month now, I will bring on two or three creators on my podcast for you to share your dreams and passions and ask me questions on how I can help you grow your brand and your voice and help you find it and refine it more. The reason why I'm starting this new trend on the podcast is because I was working at a restaurant 4 years ago when I started my first podcast. On a DUI probation, I was washing dishes at a restaurant. I had this dream to, you know, inspire others, you know, through the adversity that I was going through at the time. And now this mission has led to what I'm doing now on this podcast, Forward Creative. And I want to give back to those who gave back to me by sharing their voice on this podcast. And because I know what it feels like to be in a saturated content world nowadays where your voice isn't really heard. And you feel like that your content's not good enough because they have a better production team than you. You know, they have more better content ideas than you. Don't get caught up in the ideas of comparison. Get caught up in the ideas of, you know, you versus you and working on yourself, and you'll be a lot more happier. I see a lot of people that aren't happy because they're like, well, I'm not where I'm at because they made it. And it's like, no, they just did the work consistently each week. And I want individuals to come on who are earning their dream and they're actually out there getting it. And, you know, I'm not where I'm at in my dream. Yeah, my dream is to be a top 100 podcaster and be a multimillionaire entrepreneur. That's my dream. But I'm not giving up until I see that become a reality. And I want those who are driven and passionate to come on here to share that for at least 30 to 45 minutes. It's so important to give back to your community and to those who listen to your podcast. I'm also currently working on a new mastermind. So if you're interested in joining a mastermind for creators, please head over to scottbanco.com and you can join my mastermind. It's like, you know, $50 a month. We'll be bringing on other creators monthly, having, you know, office meetings a couple times a week. I know a lot of people who listen to my podcast work a 9-to-5 or they're running their own business. This can be a place for you to come and build a community and we can collaborate together. And really share passionate, creative ideas that I want this to be a place for you to really explore who you are and open up that identity. So for now on, any listener that writes a review over on Apple Podcasts or you tag it in your story, I will pick two or three people a month to come on this podcast who's earning their dream and who's actually out there pursuing it. I don't just bring on everybody because I want to bring on people who are actually really living their truth every day. And I want to bring something new to this podcast so you can relate and share it with a friend and really inspire you to go after your dream and your passions. Please have our Apple Podcast write a review for me. Tell me how this episode has helped inspire you today in some way to help you grow and be more creative in your life.
Hey everybody, this is Scott Banco, and I'm here with Anita Paniker on the Forward Creative Podcast, something that I'm doing new now, where I share creators' voice, where they come on and share their passions and dreams. When I started my podcast, I was washing dishes at a restaurant. Nobody really ever heard my story, so I wanted Anita to come on and share her story and her dreams and a little bit about how you're doing today.
Hey, Scott. Thanks so much for having me on. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
This is great. I think this platform that you're doing is awesome, Scott. Because we hear the big stories, right? But what about all the other incredible stories? So thank you. I think it's such a great honor for me to be here.
Yeah, you know, it's always important to share people's dreams. You know, some people go one way in this life and some people go another and they're inspired by that. Tell me a little bit about what kind of music you're listening to lately. I'm a big music guy. I like to get real personal.
Oh, I love music. Believe it or not, I am like really feeling the 90s vibe that's replaying all over the place. Yeah. And I'm really enjoying it because my kids, who are obviously like into the Drake, into all the new stuff. They're like, yeah. Who's Mary J. Blige and who's Dre and who's Dr. Dre and Snoop? So
yeah,
I listen to everything. I love some good Christian music. I love, you know, like Toby Mac and, you know, all of them. But I also love hip hop.
Hip hop.
Chris Brown's really making a comeback in my playlist.
Okay. It's like my high school days. I remember
Sia is hot. Beyonce the Queen is obviously my queen. So yeah, I'm all over the place with music. I love it though.
That's good. Yeah, I'm a big 90s guy. My all-time favorite bands are Goo Goo Dolls. I'm sure you guys see me share.
The Cranberries. Yeah, I heard Zombie by Cranberries the other day. I was like, oh my gosh, this is my teenage years.
Yeah, I actually met them back in 2014. It was really cool. I've seen them like 6 or 8 times. Like I'm a huge fan. Yeah, 90s rap. I mean, I listen to a lot of Christian music. Casting Crowns, that's a good, Christian rock band that I listen to. A lot of rock and roll. You see on my LinkedIn. So we like to rock out here on Ford Creative. But yeah, Anita, tell me a little bit about your journey and like what you've been doing on LinkedIn lately. Because I know you've been trying to get speaking gigs. You've been trying to grow your voice on here. Tell me a little bit about your story.
Yeah, it's going really well. So I'm a hospital administrator by trade and I love what I do. But my journey really started back when I was 9 years old, when I immigrated from India, a tiny little village in India, and we moved to Denver, Colorado, and didn't know a lick of English. I couldn't read, write, or speak English very well, very, very bare minimum. So I didn't sound like the person that's talking today. But all around me were people who sounded just like me, and nobody slowed down to say, do you understand? Not the teachers, not the principals, not my friends. And people back in the late 80s in Denver, Colorado, it was not a very diverse community. So people didn't know. They're like, are you black? Are you white? What are you? And I said, well, neither. I'm from India. And they're like, well, where is that? Well, what part of it? Are you American Indian? Meaning Native American. I said, no, just didn't really feel understood whatsoever. So we didn't have much money at all. Barely had furniture to sit on. My parents, who were very successful in India for Indian standards, came here looking for a better life for their family. And they would, walk to work in the blizzards. And my mom would work, 2 and 3 and 4 jobs for measly $4 and $5 an hour. I would sit on newspaper, because we couldn't afford a sofa. And we couldn't get to the bookstores to buy books. We didn't have cable. We didn't have any of that. So Encyclopedia Britannica became my best friend. The sales guy who would sell used Encyclopedia Britannica. The kids nowadays don't.
That's different. That's a little different.
Yeah. So I would sit there and read these encyclopedias from cover to cover and just like these words would just come alive in my mind of like what this word means and what this word means. And I would watch Connie Chung and Peter Jennings and Dan Rather on the news channel. And I would pretend like I was an anchor and I was talking complete gibberish. And I would make my parents and my brother listen and say, one day I'm going to do this. Okay. I'm going to one day be in front of millions of people. I'm going to be a TV broadcaster. I would watch Wheel of Fortune, Vanna White, and the whole Jeopardy. Alex Trebek was my hero because
he was awesome. I miss that guy. That guy changed my childhood,
Exactly. When he died, I actually grieved so badly.
Yeah.
And before I knew it, I started sounding like an American. People weren't looking at me strangely, what's coming out of your mouth? And before I knew it, I started writing my feelings out in journals everywhere. And one day there was a writing contest and I wrote about a little white dove outside of my classroom and it went to district level and I won. And all of my life, people have said, you're such a fantastic writer. You're incredible. You should do this. And I was like, I love to write. And so my passion, I think it reignited in my 40s. And I thought to myself, I'm a healthcare executive. I love, love, love what I do. I've had the great fortune of having a wonderful career, but that's not exactly what I want to do and finish off the next 20 of my life. I want to have a greater impact and I want to take on stages and share the stories of growing from this hopeless, lost immigrant girl to who I am today, having a greater influence and being able to lead people with authenticity and just really speaking of. So I came up with my book title. My book is coming out in
exciting. September, I'm excited hopefully. To see it.
Yeah, it's called Growth Goat. And that's also named after my company is Growth Goat. And people are like, what the heck is that? What does that mean? Well, goat is kind of a take on greatest of all time. We're a basketball family here. Kids play competitive ball. And anyway, so goat, is it Michael Jordan? Is it Kobe? Was it, who is it? And so I said, goat, God, you know what? If I look back on my life since age 9, the grit and the gutsiness that I've been able to show and that I've seen other people, the greatest people always have some guts. They always go against the grain, right? They've developed a ton of grit. The O is the greatest people that I know in their industries, they are obsessed. They get a little bit obsessed. They get a lot obsessed with their craft. And then they're highly accountable. They're accountable to themselves first to come through with what they say they're going to do. And then they're accountable to other people, whether it's their viewers, whether it's the people that they lead, their families, whoever, right? And then T is teachability. It doesn't matter how wise you are. I mean, have a couple of graduate degrees. I'm pursuing my doctorate degree. It doesn't matter. That doesn't necessarily make me wise. I remain nimble. I remain teachable. And when I look at the greatest of all time of people, and I remember looking at Connie Chung, the news anchor, Peter Jennings, looking at Alex Trebek, looking at Michael Jordan, looking at Oprah Winfrey, looking at the people in whatever industry that were the giants, these four characters were always present. And I thought, there's something to it. I'm going to write a whole book about this. I'm going to develop a coaching platform, consulting platforms all around these four principles. And I named it Growth Goat. So it's coming out late summer, early fall.
Exciting. I'm
yeah.
ready.
Yeah.
I think that's really awesome how you took your childhood, your childlike innocence and still kept that as you grew throughout your career. And now you're writing stories about your idols from media that shaped who you are and where you're going. I think it's so important to be present, because if you're not present in your life, you're not really keeping yourself accountable.
Absolutely.
So I can definitely agree with what you're saying. So what has been the biggest challenges for you on LinkedIn, or any challenges that you've been growing your personal brand? Because I know you've been putting yourself out there a lot more and getting experiences myself, because I, you know, I've been failing a little bit, but gaining here. So
yeah, the challenge I think is, first of all, you know, being an executive, like I just didn't have time to sit on a platform because I'm out there working, I'm out there doing stuff. So I would rarely log on if I weren't actively recruiting for a position, or if I weren't purposely looking for a new opportunity myself, I really wasn't on LinkedIn. And here I am about a year ago, I find out this is where everyone's hanging out. You know, like there's a whole community out here of relationships and clients to be. And so it's the challenge has been to be consistent, right? Like it takes everything to show up every single day. So I told myself, you know what? Every single day I'm going to show up. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be pretty, but I'm going to show up every single day. On Sunday, it's my Sabbath. I'm going to chill. So today, this is an oddity because I'm usually not on LinkedIn on Sunday, but I always make an exception for you, Scott.
Well, I always appreciate being accountable. Sunday, you know, I told you about my weight loss journey, lost 50 pounds in 6 months. So, you know, I actually walk to the gym and back every day. That's true. It's right by my condo. So I just go to a Planet Fitness, just work out. It's like $10 a month. A book that changed my life about accountability was Atomic Habits by James Clear.
I'm in the thick of it right now. I love it.
Yeah. That was a book that really changed me, and a lot of coaching, you know, too, with our mastermind that we've been in, you know, connecting with other people. It's just really important to keep those five people or three people in your life that, you know, keep you congruent with yourself.
100%. And those people don't have to be the yes, ma'am, yes, sir guys.
Yeah.
Those people have to be like, why are you doing that?
Right.
Well, are you sure you want to do that? Because, and they're not doing it from a place of judgment, but they're doing it from a place of love and accountability, right? Because they deeply care about you. Oh, I see Robert on. Hey, Robert.
Yeah. What's going on? Engaging a little bit here. So with your LinkedIn audience, who's your target market right now? Like who are you, your clients that you're really trying to gain attraction with?
Yeah, it's twofold. One are top leaders of any organization, any professional networks, associations that say, I like what she's after. I like what she's doing. I like her message. I want her on my stage. I want her on my platform. I want her influencing my teams. Mm-hmm. I want her to come and do development things, opportunities and trainings for my teams. How do I get her? That's one. Okay. That's a great audience. I'm always connecting with them. My second audience is who I was just a year ago, or who I still am in a lot of ways, that executive, that professional, that mid-level manager, maybe, or that new leader, that new professional that says, I like it. I really want to climb this corporate career, but I don't know how. I lack that corporate confidence. I just did a corporate confidence masterclass that teaches people just basic things like how do you go up and advocate for yourself, asking for a raise, asking for a promotion, always having a seat at that table when you're not really welcome, dealing with kind of the mean girl culture.
Been there before.
Yes. The mean girl culture that is rampant in corporate America, the good old boy culture that's rampant in corporate America, really tackling all those. So it's twofold. One are those top executives that have the power and authority, the event coordinators, event directors, people who are like, I like you. I like your gym. I like your style. Come on my stage. Come talk to my people. I want you to influence my people. And then the second are, how do you do what you do? I want that confidence. I want to be able to talk like that. I want to be able to interview and speak up for myself and advocate for myself. I want to know how to have that executive presence. I love, love, love coaching and developing people like that. So that's my audience.
That's really good. And I like how you're, you know, growing into that avenue. What is most exciting for you coming up right now besides your book, like other things that you're working on?
Yeah. So this doctoral degree, I'm a Baylor. Woo-hoo. Go Bears. Sick 'em Bears. So I am going to be done. I'm in the thick of my dissertation, so I'll be done, a doctor of education in December of 2024, God willing.
Congrats.
Thank you. On that. And then just growing my business, right? Growth Goat. You know what entrepreneurship is like. It is not for the faint of heart.
No, it's up and down. Very up and down, you know?
Nobody's telling you.
You build a paper airplane on your way down. That's what I've learned. You jump off the cliff and then build a paper airplane on your way. That's exactly what my grandfather always told me. So.
Well, those of us in the community that we're in, we realize that we're building this thing like from the ground up. Like I did not inherit a dime. I have worked since I was 15 years old, stacking groceries, and I promoted to being a cashier and worked 3 jobs during college and, you know, took out student loans. And it, you know, my parents always provided for everything that we needed and wanted as a childhood, but my goodness, like I did not come from wealth or money. So I want to be able to give back. I want to be able to serve. My dad passed 8 years ago from cancer.
Sorry to hear about that.
Yeah, it's okay. He'd be very proud of what I'm doing, but that's what he did this for, you know, to give me this voice, to give me the confidence as a brown, you know, Indian American to say, you know, go out there and get it. Go out and play with the big players. Yeah. You're one of them. And so, yeah, building this company from the ground up and having all the folks that are questioning, like, what in the world are you doing? Like, what is this?
I know everybody around you, it's like me when I go to the gym. I'm just so focused when I'm at the gym. And I notice people, they come up and work out actually next to me. And the people that see me coming every day, they're like, dude, you're just so focused. You don't even say hi to us sometimes. I'm a busy guy and I have things I'm going towards. You know, sometimes you're going to look to your left and your right and people aren't, you know, they're stationary, but you can inspire those people by you taking action in your life and really motivating them. It takes I call it the eye of the tiger thing. You know, that you see me post a lot of Rocky.
Yeah.
You know, the movie inspired me. I had a really rough upbringing. My grandma came to this country with nothing from Hungary. She ran 100 miles out of her country. True story. Spoke at churches, was in Toledo, Ohio newspaper for 60 years, Hungarian immigrant. She came here with her friend, was actually put in like a concentration camp for like 8 months after World War II. She grew up during the war and she always told me these stories growing up. And she's like, Scott, you need to be really grateful for what you have in your life. I sacrificed a lot to get here. And my dad, you know, growing up, he was an alcoholic. My grandfather was an alcoholic. And I didn't grow up real rich with silver spoon in my mouth. I had to work. I worked since I was like 14. I was a busser at a restaurant, working at a Turkish restaurant. My stepdad's Turkish, actually, married my mom still. So he came over from Turkey. And he would cook on cruise ships all over the world. He cooked in New York. He's in Miami now. He works at a restaurant in Florida. So yeah, I was always around immigrants and, you know, perseverance. And my grandfather started his own company. He worked on Wall Street in LA. He started his own insurance company. He's from Jersey. So a lot of my family's from New Jersey, my mom's side. So I can definitely relate with your story because that's what inspires me to carry that legacy and, you know, that tradition in my family. Because, you know, I come from a very hardworking, you know, community around me. So
Robert said he grew up with a plastic spoon in his mouth right here. I eat away so, with my hands. I still eat.
I like the comment, Rob. Give me a little comedic.
I love it. Rob always shows up. I love it. But yeah, I think just the power of what immigrant USA, like I'm all for it, but I'm also for this great land. Like I don't take that for granted, not a single day. And I think that opportunity is there for everyone. You got to work through some stuff. I think we got to have our voices heard. And if I can do it, my goodness, so many other people can. And I think there's, and so when I say like my clients aren't just immigrants, they happen to be a lot of immigrants because I think there's that pull, that natural attraction of like, oh my gosh, she came here. She wasn't born here. She wasn't born with, you know, a silver spoon in her mouth. How does she do that? And I love that opportunity to be able to do that influence.
And that's kind of been my mission. Like I was just like, when I started podcast, like I told you, I was washing dishes at a restaurant. It's a true story. Yeah. When I was on a second DUI probation, just was going through a lot. I was making no money, barely had money to, I bought my first check. I was washing dishes at a restaurant. I bought my first Blue Yeti mic and I would just record and I could hear all my roommates in the background while I was recording. It was like the worst audio. I had to redo my first interview with actually some LinkedIn influencer. I think her name was Tony Marie Bub. And just looking back at the growth of where you are now and where I'm at, it's just crazy. You're always manifesting things and planting your seeds, and they eventually, once you water them, they grow. And then you look back. I don't know, that Steve Jobs quote is, you connect the dots forwards, you connect them backwards.
I don't know. I haven't heard that one. That's cool, though.
But it's always, you're always looking like past tense, but pretense, you know, like forward. And that's why I named the show Ford Creative, because like I'm always like looking forward to my life and my future, not looking back in the past. And looking back at your story, it's crazy to see where you are now, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's what we do. That's why our past exists, because we can't just say, well, that didn't happen. No, it did happen. Like, take a moment to understand what happened, where you came from, right?
Yeah.
Like, I do not forget sitting on the floor and not on a couch. I do not forget the fact that I was made fun of and that I would hide in bathroom stalls to get away from the mean people because they thought I had some sort of contagious situation going on because I didn't sound like them or talk like them. Or when I would open, you know, my box, I didn't like Lunchables. I didn't like ham sandwiches. I wanted my Indian food because that's what gave me comfort during the midday. So when I would open it, it would smell. And people were like, what is that you're eating?
I noticed that too growing up with me, because I was I wasn't like that, but I was always open to new cultures. You know, that was just who I was.
But I mean, to avoid that, you know, ridicule, I would just like go and sit in a bathroom stall for 30 minutes. And I don't forget that. But I don't look at that, right? That's not where our future is. Well, I'm raising three little children. I tell them, be that kid who finds the new kid. Be that kid who looks a little bit off, who looks new, who doesn't have it all together. Go to them and say, can I be your friend? Can I play with you? Can I sit next to you? Forget like being with the crowd all the time and get away from the crowd. And so our future's not in the rearview mirror. Somebody posted that the other day and I thought that was genius. Like we see it. You got to be careful. You got to keep looking back because you got to keep your eye on the prize. But what happened in the past also matters because it kind of creates who you are and it kind of defines you.
I can relate to that. I was bullied for 5 years in high school, like really bad. And I would eat lunch in the bathroom some days. Like I had no friends. I was a loser. Like literally I was an outcast. And I always think we carry a thread of that with us, you know, but you know, looking back, I forgive a lot of people for what they did to me, you know, and I'm not mad at anybody, but I can relate to like your story, like hiding yourself. Like when I was growing up in high school, I would go up and watch PBS and Charlie Rose interviews. I wouldn't even eat dinner with my family downstairs. I was so like living in pain all the time. And I would eat like dinner upstairs and then watch like interviews and documentaries and history. I love history. History is one of my, you know, favorite things. I think it's so important to know our history and where we're going and why we do the things we do. Cause it repeats itself if you, you know, don't make change.
Absolutely. Robert asked a cool question. Why do you think underdogs, immigrants, the poor, et cetera, struggle more in corporate setting? I mean, Scott, you can take that. I can take that too.
Yeah, you share, Anita. I want to hear your side. So,
being that, right? Being both of those, Robert, honestly, I think there's this perception that like maybe those we don't have the relatable stories that the common folk does, you know, like in the executive world, there was quite a bit of imposter syndrome. And I know that term is like overused all the time. When I tell you, I didn't feel worthy. I did not feel like my lived experiences mattered. Like they weren't quite as important as everybody else's. So I would just shy away and say, you know, I'm just the worker bee. Let me just keep my head down. It's a very cultural thing too. We're taught, you know, from a very young age, like don't ask a whole bunch of questions. Just go be really thankful when you get a job that has benefits and that has perks. Like you just say thank you. And when somebody says jump, you say how high, and you just do it. Never be the person who says, well, why? Well, why would I do that? Well, no, I don't want to do that. God forbid you say no. And it's a whole new world to be empowered to say, no, ask questions. Why? Why are we doing it that way? Well, you know, I respectfully disagree with that. I don't think we should do it that way. And I remember my mom being so scared. Like, what are you doing? You're going to mess up the best thing that you've ever had. I'm like, Mom, I have to be under control. And she's like, no, you don't understand. You have this and you have this. And so it's a risk. You weigh out the risk and the benefits, right? So I think this real struggle is the imposter syndrome is so, so real. And I don't think that immigrants and the poor and the people that are the underdogs, the marginalized people understand that their stories have power, their stories have value. And really, we could use those lived experiences to thrive and to grow companies, grow organizations. But the second that I realized, wait a minute, I think my lived stories can actually encourage my teams. Well, my teams take off. You know, they feel valued more. They feel empowered more. They feel heard because they know that I'm a real human being that came from struggles.
Do you think a lot of organizations need more consultants coming into their company for like middle level management to help with the workplace culture and, you know, identifying their workers more personally?
So I've been at companies where there's both. There's some companies, if they have the resources, they have a lot of internal consultants that work with people. That middle management level, I think, is kind of the forgotten group. because you're there, you're cush, right? You're doing all the job. You're not top level, right? You don't have a whole lot of authority, but you have just enough authority over the line level folks. So I do agree. If a company doesn't have their own leadership academy or development programs, then absolutely invest in people like me. I mean, I'm not, this isn't just a plug-in. Maybe it is a plug-in, but for people like me who have been there to say, come in and can you do this? Can you handle this like twice a year? Come and develop them. Talk to them. Talk to them about what their struggles are. I absolutely agree. But fortunately, a lot of large organizations, resourceful organizations, they have their own people. I work for one where they're incredible about it. You know, they really pour into their own employees, especially that mid-level leadership. And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's very evident.
Do you eventually want to have employees for your company, or do you just want to have a business partner and just kind of keep it small? Or how do you see
scaling? No, I definitely want to scale. And I think you scale when you partner with giants like you. You know, I have no need or desire to just excel at this thing independently. I want to figure it out first, right?
This
is my dream, my vision. But I know at some point you go the distance when you link arms with powerful people and their powerhouses all around me. And I think two are better than one eventually. Mm-hmm. Three are better than one. I think there's power in number. I think there's power in additional brain power. So yeah, eventually I do. I do see myself really, really scaling. I mean, honestly, I'm already at the point where I probably need kind of an assistant or kind of somebody who's, somebody who can just kind of do the things that I come up with the ideas and I have so much in my head, but it's me that's like, you know, and I don't think that's productive. I think we can do a lot for ourselves if we just let go of some of that control and say, you know what, I need your help. And I do. Mm-hmm. I have some really talented people that I have in my head that I plan on partnering with in the near future.
That's awesome. I'm excited for that. You know, you talked about journaling earlier on in this episode. I wanted to talk about, how do you stay organized during your day? Do you still keep those same habits today, or have you changed those?
So it has to get even more fine-tuned, right? I think I hate to say higher up, but it's just the more you have on the plate, the potential to get it all mixed up, like all the different food groups are touching and all layering on top of each other before you say, I don't know if I'm eating sweet potato versus regular potatoes and Robert said all this food talk is making him hungry.
I know. I'll probably get Chipotle here in a little bit.
I use a lot of food analogies. I use a lot of airplane analogies. I don't know. It just works for me. But when you have a ton on your plate, if you don't get really strategic with a fine tooth comb to say, I'm going to separate this and have these boundaries, it's all going to get on top of each other. So yes, I still have really good healthy habits of journaling. I wish I could do it every single day, but I make it a point to do it a couple of times a week because it grounds me. It helps me put things on paper. No one is talking back to me. See, even I love my husband. I talk to him all the time, right? But he's a human being and he wants to help. He gets protective. Yeah. He gets defensive. He becomes my advocate. But the paper, it doesn't talk back to me. You know, it just lets me unleash. And I
like that. That's cool.
Yeah. I think we all need to unleash. The walls of my car, it's become almost like a temple. It's such a sacred space for me because I can scream and I can sigh and I can just breathe. And then I come back in or I go to my office and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go. Let's do this. Right.
Cause you're always on the go. I always notice you post photos with your car.
I'm all the time. I'm gone everywhere. I'm rarely home, and home is my favorite place to be, but it's out there. Life is out there, you know?
It's just, are you going to go out and get it and chase it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The big problem is that people are promoted to mid-level management roles because they can perform tasks well. However, mid-level management is more about managing people. So there is a gap. Absolutely. I think we do. I think you hit the nail on the head is we focus on, well, what are your experiences? You know, what have you done? What are the things you've done? What are the things you're able to accomplish? And less about like, how do you encourage other people, motivate them? How do you deal with a demotivated, disengaged group of teams? How about emotional intelligence? How does that play into it?
Right.
I think we just hire people that check mark. They look incredible on resumes. They've done a ton of projects, but you get them before a bunch of human beings and they lack empathy. They lack the ability to
self-awareness too.
Not self-awareness. But yeah, these are things that, you know, I have a lot of schooling, but I didn't get any of that at the university.
You know, when I started my first podcast, the Vanco Project, I did about 40 interviews. It wasn't just interviewing the biggest people. You know, when I was working at a restaurant, I learned a wealth of knowledge. You know, podcasting is a labor of love. And I learned more doing that than I did in college through my own struggles and pain in my life, just hearing other stories, you know, and that's what kept me going to keep doing this show because I gave up and started again. So I think it's so important to keep that passion alive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. My car knows all my secrets.
I love Rob's comments. He's a rock star.
I mean, it's so true, right? You got to have it somewhere. And it's completely inappropriate to make an executive boardroom my secret place, right? Like, that's not my safe place. That's where I come to get my work done. That's where I come to negotiate. That's where I don't unleash on my clients when they're home. I don't unleash on a stage. Like, that's when I am polished and I come together. I'm there to serve the people that's in front of me. But my car, my journal, my safe spot, whoever that is, maybe it's a grown child, maybe it's, you know, maybe it's a spouse or a partner, whoever that is, I think it's so critical. So you asked, how do I keep myself organized? The more you have on your plate, the more that's so important, because otherwise it can get really muffled really, really quickly. So making it intentional to prioritize what has to happen today, what has to happen later today, what has to happen before I finish today, and then what can happen tomorrow. That's really reprioritizing.
And I like your story about like how your husband's really been big in your life. I think it's so important to have such a huge advocate like that. You know, it's hard when your entrepreneurship is a lonely road, you know, and it's hard to stay consistent, be on track. How has your relationship been with your husband throughout all this? You know, him supporting you?
Yeah, it's just like a lot of partnerships. It's the greatest partnership that I have because he sees my dream, right? Like, he sees the grind behind it. He sees the sweat and tears behind it. And then he sees the conflict that I have. At the end of the day, I'm a mom of three young kids, and I'm taking care of aging parents. Both of us are taking care of aging parents, and we have a community. We have 10,000 things to do, but he's such an anchor. He's such a cheerleader for me, and I honestly could not be pursuing any of these dreams if it weren't for him. So when I see single moms, single dads, single men and women who maybe don't have that anchor, and I said, my goodness, hats off to you, because how do you do that? Because I honestly...
I don't know how you do it. I don't have kids. I'm not married. I'm single. Like, that's, I respect you for that, because there's some days where I'm like, you know, I need to be more grateful in my life, because like, some people have more going on and responsibilities than just me showing up to a gym every day, you know? So
yeah.
I definitely applaud you for that.
Yeah. But so, it is a struggle. That mom guilt is very real. So our relationship has, you know, it goes through ups and downs as usual, but I think it's really being intentional with that relationship to say, like, I think it was yesterday that I posted, the rest of the year, focus on dot, dot, dot. And I kind of outline like the things that you should do. But the very last thing is like, make room, like capital M-A-K-E, room for the things and people that are important and that matter. And he's number one. I do not have time for anything. I ain't got time for that. Okay. But I have time for him. I'm going to make time for him. Even if it means 10 things come off the plate, I'm going to make room for him. I'm going to make room for the things and people that matter.
That's good. You both have that like space to come together. Like, he does his own thing, you do your thing, and you work on your business. What does he do now currently? Does he have any other
passion? He's an entrepreneur as well. Yeah. He's an entrepreneur as well. He also works, he's in the medical field as well. So we share a lot of similar interests. Yeah. He works for a large organization here locally, but he does a lot of, he's a financial professional where he teaches people about what to do with their money. And so he has a great client base where he's educating them on the importance of life insurance and, you know, not just saving money, but investing money and what to do with it, what not to do with it. So that's been really powerful. And then he, on the fun side, like he wishes basketball is his love. So I think he lives a lot vicariously through our children's lives. So they're in a lot of competitive ball. Growing up as immigrant children, we didn't have a lot of opportunities to be in these AAUs and team sports. It was just like, go to school and make straight A's. Like, that was the only marching orders that we had.
Mine was like, pretend I'm sick and skip school. I was always calling off sick. Like, I would skip football practice, so like a new video game came out.
We were the kids with perfect attendance awards and all of this stuff. So we didn't really get to, like, I wanted to be in dance. I wanted to go and, you know, be in softball or whatever. And he wanted to be in basketball. And he goes to all of our kids' basketball tournaments. He's like, babe, I wish my parents could have afforded, and our parents were incredible, but they couldn't afford the fees and the dues. So he also customizes shoes. So he has clients that he'll take, he's all into kicks. He's all into Jordans and, you know, Air Forces, and he'll customize them and he'll sell them to whoever's interested. Yeah.
I like that. Where can everybody find you on social media, Anita?
I think the most prominent would be on LinkedIn. That's where I'm spending most of my time. So look me up on LinkedIn, and also growthgoat.com. That's my website. And that will kind of take you to different places. It'll talk about my book. It'll talk about who I am, how to reach me. My contact information, email address is all on there.
Everybody go ring Anita's bell, all right? And follow her amazing journey. And we're going to get you a TED Talk soon, eventually. So.
That's it. That's on my goal. You know, it's on my vision board. I'm a very visual person. I think when we write it down, when we speak it, I think it comes to existence. Obviously, there's a lot of grit and glory that goes behind it, but absolutely, it's on my short list.
I do have one last question for you. I always ask this on my podcast. What is your meaning of creativity?
What is my what?
Your meaning of creativity.
That's a good one, Scott. Meaning of creativity. I would say the ability to make something out of nothing, right? And I learned that at a very young age. My dad, God rest his soul, but he obviously not a trained chef or anything like that, just a home cook trying to make his way through the kitchen and feed a bunch of kids. But he would take like the slops of leftovers and he would make magic. And when I say magic, you would think that you were dining at like a five-star restaurant after you ate what he made out of leftover potatoes and leftover curry and mix it up. And he would chop, I mean, he would make a hot mess in the kitchen. My mom would stay on him and yell at him, but whew, I have never had food like that before. And I do that too in the kitchen. I mean, it ain't pretty. My husband's behind me clean it up, but man, people can't get enough of it. And so creativity to me is life handed you this, or your genetics handed you this, health issues handed you this, or you know, whatever handed you this, and you turn around and you get it all together, mix it all up, and something beautiful comes out of that. And for some people, for you, it may look like this podcast. It may look like this new company that you're after. For, you know, Robert, it may look like taking auditors to a whole other level, teaching them to be personable and, you know, act with emotional intelligence in their head and influencing so many people. For me, it looks like becoming an author, something I've only dreamt about because I couldn't read or write or speak English and need to master the language. For me to be able to influence people and become their coach, for people to trust me to take their stage on their behalf and talk to their amazing employees. Like, to me, that's creativity and saying, what am I doing? I'm going back to 40 years and saying, let me make something beautiful out of this and give it to you. And you'll walk away and say, that was good.
I like that. That's really awesome. My stepfather used to do the same thing. He used to make like, chicken kebab. It's Turkish food, actually. I don't know if you've had Turkish food before. It's really good. And he would like come home with like leftovers from, you know, his restaurant shift he worked at, and he would just make like some magic out of it. So I could definitely relate to that with your father. So
and you can take that. Remember, I told you I do a lot of food analogies and plane analogies. Yeah. But I think that's it. You could take that when it comes to dance, entrepreneurship, anything. Yeah. Taking something and making kind of beauty out of ashes. You know, that's also very biblical to me. You know, like, I think when there's a hot mess is when kind of the Lord comes in and makes kind of a beautiful thing out of that mess. And that's me. That's you.
Like
that's all
it.
Of
I
us.
Like it. Finding beauty within the mess. I like that. Yeah. So, well, thank you, Anita, for coming on. Thanks for being a rock star on Forward Creative. And I'm excited for your future. And
you're gonna
be doing big things on stages. So don't worry. And
speak
in front of thousands of people. So there you go.
I receive it. Amen. All right. Thanks so much, Scott.
You too. Thank you. Have a good day.
Bye.
Happy 4th of July. Happy 4th.
All right. You too.
All right. Bye.
Bye.